in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days
when I was just a little gigolo, I looked up to my bigger bro, begged if I could kick it. So when he went out with girls, I could go tagging along, nagging if she had a sis.
I had a dream once. It was a dream that little black boys and little black girls would drink from the river of prosperity, freed from the thirst of oppression.
Did you go to the AAA for the maps?
Yes. No. I mean, the record companies gave me the maps and the itinerary and this thing.
The Negro Motorist Green Book.
Yeah, it lists all the places colored can stay down south. Like, you know, traveling while black.
That's Viggo Mortensen and Linda Cardellini in the Golden Globe-winning movie Green Book. The movie's title is a reference to the real Green Book, a traveler's guide back in a hostile time, which some people still remember all too well. Our cover story is reported by Martha Teichner.
The fabulous Miss Mary Wilson.
Watching Mary Wilson, feeling the love at New York's glamorous Cafe Carlyle, it's hard to imagine what she felt at the age of 19.
But my heart can't take you no more.
A newly minted Supreme, just out of high school, on her first ever road tour with a regular who's who of Motown stars. Stevie Wonder.
I really, really love.
Mary Wells, The Temptations, and others. 45 performers traveling by bus, confronted by hate in the still segregated South.
We were getting off the bus, and there were gunshots.
And they were shooting at the bus?
Oh, yeah, we had a hole, several holes in the bus. You know, your parents had told you, be careful, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You knew about the segregation. But, I mean, the gunshot sort of brought it right into your face and saying, you could be killed.
Strange fruit hanging.
It was this chilling fact of life, the racism that in 1936 inspired the Negro Motorist Green Book. Victor Green, a postal worker who lived in Harlem, began publishing a guide to businesses that welcomed African-American travelers.
You need to be careful on the road. Old Jim Crow won't let people like us stop just anywhere.
In each year's edition, a warning. Carry your green book with you. You may need it.
It just makes me wonder and make me think about today.
At the National Museum of African-American History and Culture in Washington, D.C., visitors can experience the not-so-long-gone era of the Green Book.
I remember as a little child going down south from Detroit, and my parents had to be strategic as to where they stopped.
It was after the Depression, before the war, the auto culture was really burgeoning. There were more jobs for black people.
Candace Taylor is a cultural historian whose book about the Green Book will be published this fall.
By the 40s, the second wave of the Great Migration was underway. And so you had 1.5 million black people leaving the South during that time.
At risk if they owned nice cars.
His dad worked for the railroad, had a good job, and his mother was sitting in the front seat.
Taylor tells the story of her own stepfather's family being stopped and relying on this tried-and-true subterfuge for avoiding trouble.
So the sheriff comes to the door and says, you know, who's this car? Where are you going? Who are these people with you? And his father says, you know, this is my employer's car. He looked to his wife and he said, and she's the maid, and this is her son. And then the next question was, where's your hat? Meaning the chauffeur's hat. And he said, it's hanging right in the back, officer.
Essentials for driving in and out of the Jim Crow South? That chauffeur's hat and the Green Book.
The Green Book was like a Bible. You did not leave home without it.
I think this was taken in Louisville.
Alice Clay Broadwater relied on it. She was a teacher then, traveling with her lawyer husband and small children between Boston and the South.
Black travelers in those days, in the 50s, had to carry the green book if they needed to stay overnight someplace, or if they wanted to know where they could eat.
Unless, of course, there were no green book listings en route.
It was not only frightening, it was very unsafe. If you're stopping on the side of the road, you know, you can't really sleep.
So you'd pull off the road to take a nap?
Yes.
Or to sleep?
Yes.
Because there was no place else?
Absolutely.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Route 66 was a huge hit for Nat King Cole. But here's the irony. For black travelers looking for places to stay along its more than 2,400 miles, good luck. Green book sites were scarce. So-called sundown towns were plentiful.
You'd see a sign on the way in.
What would it say?
N-word. Don't let the sun set on you here. You could have a green book, but you could still find yourself in a sundown town at the wrong time. And sometimes you'd be escorted out of town by law enforcement. Sometimes you'd be harassed or chased or worse.
Often, a safe place to stay.
This was one of the rooms?
Yes, this is it.
Was a room in someone's house. Since 2014, this historical marker has stood outside a Green Book-listed tourist home in Columbia, South Carolina.
You've got all kinds of pictures here.
Run by Reggie Scott's mother and aunt.
That's you as
That's
a
me,
kid.
Yeah.
89 now, Scott grew up in the Harriet M. Cornwell tourist home and became a musician because of the players who stayed here.
Cab Calloway was my greatest excitement. He came in Hollis.
And
tripped.
He was here in this house?
Yes, Cab was here.
Wow.
If there's one common denominator we found doing this story, it is the musicians. The unbelievably famous names who were also victims of segregation.
Duke Ellington and Billie Holiday stayed here. A lot of times they were performing downtown, where they were welcome to perform but not welcome to stay.
The Rossonian Hotel and Lounge in Denver.
That's amazing.
Now undergoing renovation, was one of more than 80 businesses in the area listed in the Green Book.
These places carry a spirit with them, you know, which is why it's so important that they're still here. I was scouting about 30 sites a day.
Candace Taylor put 23,000 miles on her car during just one of her trips around the country, documenting more than 9,600 of the sites.
If I had to guess, I'd say about at least 85% were black-owned. But there were sites like Charlie's Sandwich Shop in Boston that was in Southie that was owned by a white man.
Charlie Poulos, a Greek immigrant, opened the restaurant in 1927, and with his partner, Christy Mangiarides, served all races, possibly the first restaurant in Boston to do so.
Was there a backlash?
There was, yeah. There was some pushback.
Damian Marcianti bought Charlie's in 2017.
The original owners did not care. They just were welcome to everybody. If you didn't like it, you didn't come in.
It didn't hurt that the Black Pullman Porters Union had its headquarters upstairs. The railroad workers spread the word about Charlie's even before it began listing in the Green Book in 1947. And, of course, the jazz greats read their Green Books and came to Charlie's.
Duke Ellington, Cab Calloway, Sammy Davis Jr., he used to tap dance out in front of the diner.
As times changed, so did the Green Book. For sale by subscription and at Esso gas stations, in its heyday, it sold 2 million copies a year. But in the 1948 edition, Victor Green wrote, "There will be a day sometime in the near future when this guide will not have to be published. This is when we as a race will have equal opportunities and privileges in the United States."
And then that day comes, and he never lives to see it because he dies in 1960.
In 1964, the Civil Rights Act was passed, mandating the end of segregation. Publication of the Green Book ceased in 1967. It was largely forgotten. Its true legacy, underestimated.
Walk with me.
It's so important that we look at the Green Book not just as a historic travel guide, not as just something that we needed in the past.
Walk with me.
But what the Green Book teaches us is about the resilience and the courage of what Black people were able to do and accomplish in spite of the circumstances and everything that happened.
Come on and walk with me, Lord. Come on and take a walk.
After 3 hours,
yeah, get,
it
yeah.
can change again.
Yeah, because I know last time we came, yeah. the wind and barrier, I guess,
yeah,
early.
Yeah,
right, because when me and Remy came, we came earlier.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It depends on the season. Mm-hmm. And within the same day, it can change, it can take many forms.
Many forms?
Yeah, yeah. You can see the water come to the, to the borders. It
right.
can even, yeah, it can even come here where the heart is over there.
Really?
Yeah, the water can come there.
Oh, wow.
But it is same day.
Because I know sometimes when I'm over here, the water just looks too rough. The majority of time,
yeah.
like that water just seems like it's not safe to step foot in. Like it's gonna sweep me away and take me back to America.
It depends on the moment.
Uh-huh.
It depends on the moment. Sometimes you can sleep there. People sleep on the riverside. I mean, on the banks of the sea. Till tomorrow, they will go back home. But sometimes you cannot because the water will come over the land and chase you. That's what happens.
Okay. So let me ask you this, Richard. Yeah. Since we're at the point of no return.
Yeah.
The last, I'm not even going to say resting spot, but the last place that the slaves came to before they were shipped to the New World.
Yeah.
Do you think Africa has recovered, fully recovered from the slave trade?
That is impossible. You know, lost time is lost. We can't do anything. The only thing we can do is to try to catch up. But we cannot totally catch up. So what happened to Africa is a great damage. And if we are still at this level of development, we have to recognize that slave trade has a great part of its contribution inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Why do you think, I don't know, I just feel as if some African countries are slow to truly recognize the impact that the slave trade has had on his country, as if it didn't fully affect him. Why is it taking so long to recognize that the slave trade, the negative impact the slave trade has had on African countries?
No, please take the question again, please.
Okay. I feel as if African nations do not want to admit the negative impact the slave trade has had on their countries.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way? Do you?
No, I don't think so. You know, nobody can.
I mean, they'll speak on colonialism,
yeah.
but they won't speak on slavery.
Yeah, I understand. But we talked about that. You know, the problem is that in our educational system, they do not focus on what touches Africa. Normally, younger age, students should be talked about slave trade, colonialism, and everything. But even colonialism, they focus very less. It is because colonialism is still going on that people talk much about that. Otherwise, slave trade and all those things people talk about, but especially those who are fighting for our values, those who are Pan-Africanist.
Right.
That's the real problem. Because our mentality has been washed, I don't know how to say, with colonialism, people happened. They succeeded in changing our mind somehow.
Right.
And people think like Europeans. They think that Europeans, they have the best knowledge, they have the best culture. Everything is good when it is from Europe or from America. So otherwise, those who are working for Pan-Africanism, they always talk about slave trade. So it's just because people are not taught.
Well, the government is real quiet on it, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think?
No, the problem is that governments, the leaders know well. about the thing, and they know that no European countries are ready to help Africa move. We have to decide. But just because of their selfishness, they do not want to take the right decision. And when you want to take the decision and you are alone, it is dangerous. You will die. That will kill you. That's the real problem. We need a mental revolution, and this will be a common fight. A single president cannot stand up and say that we're going to fight against this, we're going to change everything. No, they know that this thing has done bad things to us, has great impact on our development, but to change things, they are still touched. That's the real problem.
Now, so we're at the point of no return in Ouidah, Benin. This is actually my third time coming here. This is where the Voodoo Festival will be held January 10th. I'm going to be documenting and shooting, and my brother Richard's going to be showing me around. So hope you guys enjoy the content.
Hello and welcome to Africa Watch on the Dr. Mumbi Show. My name is Dr. Mumbi Saraki. How are you doing? How's everything going? I pray that you're well wherever you are. I pray that you're just, living your best life. And thanks to every single person that has subscribed to the channel. If you haven't already, go ahead and hit that notification button so that you find out every single time we upload a new episode. And thanks to all our new Patreon and, consistent Patreon family. I love you guys. And also, to all the people who support us, through our PayPal account. I really, really appreciate you guys. Now, so much is happening on the continent as usual. But now I'm actually bringing you news about the continent, but from off the continent. And, strange things have been happening since the full moon, super blood moon, wolf moon, whatever that took place last Sunday. And I told you guys, things are starting to shift. You don't even need omens, but the omens confirm what is happening on the ground. And actually, that same Sunday, Italian Deputy Prime Minister came out and called out France, and it has caused so many issues. So he was speaking at a rally, and he said that, and he was talking about this whole immigration thing that's going on. His name is Luigi Di Maio, and he said that France is one of those countries that, by printing money for 14 African states, prevents their economic development and contributes to the fact that the refugees leave and then die in the sea or arrive on our coast. And he went on to say, this is so dope, if France didn't have its African colonies, because that's what they should be called, it would be the 15th largest world economy. Instead, it's among the first, exactly because of what it's doing to Africa. So now we have a fellow European calling out another fellow European on their bad behavior. And it's actually unprecedented. Quite a few of you sent me this article and you were like, what's up? Is it like good cop, bad cop? What's the deal? So I've looked into it, and basically, there's been a huge migrant crisis, although it's more exaggerated than what is actually, how many people are actually moving. And a new party was elected in Italy that is anti-Macron and anti-French. So they're here. They're just battling it out. And what has happened is that they've taken a very hard stance on, a very strong policy against immigration. So they've got a very strong anti-immigrant policy where if you are even an Italian citizen and you're found to have been a migrant or something, they can actually take away your Italian citizenship. So, and this is what they were voted in on. And so he's the head of this, it's called the Five Star Movement, and it's an anti-establishment kind of party. And it was founded in 2009 by a popular comedian and blogger and web strategist. And it's they call it right wing, but what I'm seeing that's happening in Europe is that a lot of these parties that are coming up that are, we're told, are right wing or fascist, are actually just nationalists saying we want our nations back because there is a covert plan to, to collapse Europe, and you guys need to look into the Kalergi plan. But those are their issues, and so not our circus, not our monkeys, literally. But what's happening now is because of this fight, Luigi Di Maio, he had this rally on Sunday, and so he came out and he said, let me not be a hypocrite and always say that it's these immigrants that are coming over, but let's start looking at some of the causes. And some of the causes is because, you know, France has still colonized the 14 nations that submit to and participate in the CFA, which is like the French franc currency. And so it's issued, you know, the main problem with this is that it's issued by the French government. And they actually determine, so it's you know, they determine the rate. So it's like they determine the rate, you know, from euro to the CFA. And, you know, it's everything is controlled by the French Central Bank. And, you know, first of all, France has always said that it's helped to provide African countries with financial stability. But this is actually a lie. And this is what the Italian deputy prime minister called him out for, because he said, no, it's not helping with financial stability. It's actually stunting the economic growth of these 14 nations. France didn't want to hear none of it. So France yesterday actually summoned the entire, you know, the Italian ambassador and was like, yo, what, you know, it's like when your teammate goes out and sells you to the, you know, to the press and you're like, yo, we did what? It's getting exciting, guys. Italy calling out France for being a colonizer of Africa till today. What? Stranger things have happened. That eclipse is affecting people. We'll be right back.
The embattled president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, says he is ending diplomatic relationship with the United States. This comes just hours after President Trump officially recognized an opposition leader as the legitimate president of Venezuela, and it comes after days of violent protests in the country.
Earlier today, the president of the National Assembly here in Caracas, the president of parliament, the president of Congress of Venezuela, swore himself in as an interim president with the support of the United States of America and of many other countries around the world, including Canada, Paraguay. These triggered an escalating reaction, and Nicolas Maduro has announced just minutes ago that he is ending all political and diplomatic relationships with the U.S. and is giving them 72 hours, for the consular staff to leave Caracas, or as early as possible. Really, situation escalating dramatically. We have seen clashes of words played in front of our eyes for the past 2 weeks. The Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, spoke with Juan Guaido, the President of the Venezuelan National Assembly, here to reiterate his support, to say that the United States are on the side of the anti-Maduro opposition here. And now we're seeing the reaction from Nicolas Maduro, who quite literally said, get out of Venezuela.
We don't want to be the slaves of the white race. 100 years ago, it was different. Some people would have undersigned that. In South Africa, we had apartheid where the blacks, had to sit on the other side. Racism cannot be defended. Colonialism must not be defended. No country has the right to colonialize other continents or other countries.
Supremacists say, who, me?
Yes.
I'm not a white supremacist. I don't believe in racism. I'm a nice guy. Hey, I'll shake your hand. You know, if you want a hug, I'll give it to you. You know, I don't believe in that stuff and all like that. And all the time, he's wink, wink, wink.
Yeah.
All right. This is the modern day, the refined white supremacist. Mr. John Wayne apparently wasn't very refined. That's why I'm quite sure that the refined white supremacist said, hey, you know, we all feel that way.
Yeah.
But you don't say it out loud in this day and time. This is to be expected.
Yes, sir.
You should always expect you're in a world dominated by racism.
racism, youth economic endeavor.
Let's do it.
All right, so last week I left off with, I guess, a somewhat controversial thesis, namely that black feminism uses a race-sex identity to partner with white women for political and economic power. And I argue that what this, in fact, does is it allows them to use gender oppression to hide their economic motivations behind aligning themselves with the second most powerful racial group in America. Now, I want to explain something. This is not only a political ideology, but this is also driven by a demographic change in the university. Right now, black women get 2/3 of the PhDs that's awarded to black people. So even though this is a type of discursive idea that comes about in disciplines like women's studies or black feminism, it's also driven by this demographic fact that you have black women now competing for jobs against other black men and other white women on these types of issues. Now, there's an obvious reality here that black men, black children are subject to the same types of abuses that black women are subject to. So even though black feminism tries to make an exclusive claim to the types of sexual and gender abuses that happen, things like rape, especially prison rape I've mentioned before, child abuse, poverty, these are all things that happen to the black community based on their sexuality in a white supremacist society. Now, what black feminism tries to do is it takes as given that the patriarchal culture that we see in a larger Eurocentric society or white society and the power of white society also translates into the power that black men have over them. So it's the domination of black women by black men. So this is where the idea I've mentioned before that black male privilege gains its ground in the academy. But this is nothing more than a kind of mythology, because what happens here is that this is not sociologically proven. It's not like we're holding sociological and economic conferences or writing papers today. There's no peer-reviewed paper on black male privilege that actually shows how it benefits black men on the long run. So then this ideology itself gains footing because what you have is an economic motivation, black women with PhDs trying to fight for limited academic and disciplinary spaces against black male academicians. So there's an economic driving force where black men now become the primary economic competitors in academic spaces with black feminists. So as we know from Reconstruction to now, there's a type of racial scapegoating that goes on that's pushed forward by an economic motivation that aligns with the ideological stereotypes that black people have, or black women, or black feminists in this case, have of other black men. So what we have to think about then is how these economic motivations behind this ideology of black feminism is not only pushing the types of things they put out, but also the analysis they give us of the black community. Now, this differs from a large view from what I'm going to talk about, which is race-conscious womanism. And what happens in the academy is that there's this view that black feminism is the only legitimate way for us to study sexuality and gender, that if you're not a black feminist, then you have everything wrong. But black womanism, or race-conscious womanism, takes a different view. First, it argues that black men and women have always been partners in the struggle against racism and sexism, or what Claudia Jones called racial chauvinism. So what this movement says is that black men are also victimized and disempowered and oppressed in society just like their women are. And this differs a great deal from how white feminists looks at the situation, because in a white society, white women are subjected to their men. That's the concept, that it's a patriarchal society, so they're being repressed and oppressed by white men. That's not necessarily the case when you look at a black society, because in black society, you're looking at black men and black women competing for economic goods and economic resources against a dominant white supremacist society that doesn't value the black man or the black woman. So whereas black feminism wants to articulate a kind of bifurcated or, in academic language, an intersectional identity, womanism is very clear that race and the material conditions of racism and neocolonialism are first and foremost in how we perceive and deal with black existence. So when you think about the people that we talk about for Black History Month, T. Thomas Forster, Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, these individuals were, in fact, a great, great supporters and advocates of black women's literacy, education, and economic empowerment. For example, Booker T. Washington funded his wife's school, Maggie Washington's industry for home economics. So there's this move that black men see that black women are fundamentally important and central to the idea of black people rising up as a race. Now, the problem I have when we talk about black feminism is that there's a type of intellectual dishonesty that exists in the narrative that tells black people generally, that this is out the academy, it wants to tell black people generally that every movement for rights, be it the civil rights movement, the black power movement, was about where black men died and were assassinated at the hands of white people, was fundamentally about black men seeking to dominate women. Whereas the women's movement, and this is what really gets me, the women's movement that was organized on the back of black people's blood and deaths against the police, the CIA, and the government, and led by the same middle-class white women who had black mammies and black domestics working for them and accepted the rape of black women from slavery all the way to segregation, somehow had the interests of black women at heart. So you have individuals who fundamentally benefited, white women who benefited from the exploitation of black women in the home so they could go to college, so they could get money in the workforce, fundamentally now that, that they've started a movement, that you should leave aside the Black Power movement, the Civil Rights movement, which was fighting for the integration of people, in the, Black people in the United States, and trust their economic interest over that against that of the race. And this, you have to really think about this. This is like I was saying last week. There is a tendency for us not to understand the complexity of American racism, where we suggest that every woman, be it a Black woman or a white woman, has not been able to be, cannot be held accountable and culpable for the type of racism that goes on in society. So when we talk about what Black womanism or race-conscious womanism does versus Black feminism, we have to keep our mind on the anti-Black racist nature and the anti-Black violence in society and how Black people, the Black community, Black men and women as a whole, chose to respond to that violence. And I think that race-conscious womanism centers that kind of reality against the economic-driven motivations of the contemporary Black feminist movement in the academy today.
Well said, Dr. Tommy Curry. Dr. Tommy Curry, how can folks get in contact with you?
They can hit me on Twitter at Dr. TJC.
You've been listening to Ready News Review, the podcast with America's independent voice, Rob Ready, presented by Reading Communications Incorporated. For all the pressing news you need to know, log on to www.readingnewsreview.com.
Of course you can lie to me, and you will. If you love me and you're going off with Maddie someplace, you're lying to me. Because what the hell do I care about the truth? I care if you're there. What Billie Holiday say, hush now, don't explain.
All right, I accept that.
Of course. Of course you lie to me. Because I don't even want to care. What does the truth matter? And why are you going to be truthful with me when you lie to everybody else? You lied when you smiled at that cracker down the job, right? Lie to me. Smile. Treat me the same way you would treat him.
I can't treat you the way I treat him.
You must. Because I've caught the frowns and the anger. He's happy with you. Of course he doesn't know you're unhappy. You grin at him all day long. You come home and I catch hell. Because I love you, I get least of you. I get the very minimum. And I'm saying, you know, fake it with me. Is that too much of the Black woman to ask of the Black man?
Your work is finished, don't watch the television. Once your work is finished, don't watch the television. Once your work is finished, find something constructive to add to your mind. Have an hour for reading. And I don't mean read comic books. Read something that will make you know what's happening, so when you get in the conversation, you can sound intelligent, even if you aren't. Do you hear me what I'm saying? Why, what kind of man want a wife today who can't hold a conversation? No, don't a man want to sit up and talk to you about babies, about Johnny needs some shoes? Your husband don't even want to hear that. One of the reasons you have trouble in your house is you can't carry an intelligent adult conversation.
Right.
When your husband was dead, you talked trash. That's all you talk, trash. Now he come out, he's a Muslim. He want to talk about Yaku. He want to talk about the sun, moon, and star. He want to talk about cracking atoms. Even if he don't know what he's talking about, that's what he want to talk about. I'm telling you this so you won't lose your husband. All of you will agree that your husband is more serious once he become a Muslim than he was when he was a Christian. He's serious. Now, you can't hold no man down like you used to, talking some trash about sister so-and-so. And I'm telling you, that would drive a man crazy. No, go get a book and read it. And then when he come in the house, start talking to him about something that's going to nourish his mind and nourish your mind. Read your lessons and talk about the lessons. But I'm going to tell you a strange thing. I don't want to get on this subject, but I'm going to tell you anyway. See, you've been so far away from this that if your husband sit and read, studying, he can be reading beside you, studying, something serious, you think he's ignoring you. But if he put down his book and both of y'all sit and watch the TV together, that make you happy, doesn't it? Why don't you think that he can read with you as easily as watch the television with you? I'm going to tell you why. You don't know enough about what he's reading. You don't know enough about what he's interested in, so that when he's doing what he's interested in, you feel left out. But the television is your level. Please forgive me for saying that. But the television is your level. You got a television brain, a television vocabulary, and you live in a television world. Now, as long as your man is spending time with you on your level, you're happy. But when he tries to get you into a world that's based on intellect, that's based on intelligence, that's based on nourishing that brain, you feel left out. And you are left out. I don't make you angry for saying this, do I? But this is good for you, because when you understand that, you know how to get him, and if you got him, you know how to keep him.
Right.
But if you don't understand that, I'll guarantee you, you won't keep what you got, and you won't get what you got your eyes on.
Right.
Do you understand that? That's the beginning. That's when you take your first step. But there's more to it than that. And what you and I want to do is get organized so not only can we take a step, we can dance a little bit. You understand? See, stepping is all right. Walking is all right. But when you can use those legs, brother, to put down all kinds of action, then you got it made. Do you understand? Very good. A black man, by being the natural man and in accord with nature, has perfect control over all of his natural ability. He harmonizes it. He blends it. He rhythm, brother. He be rocking your jaw, singing a tune. Am I right or wrong? He's different. Oh, that's a sign. All that shows you what you can do when you get in accord with nature, when you get in accord with your own nature, and when you be yourself. Do you understand? Now, whenever a man has to run a race, he has to have perfect control over both legs. Am I right?
Right.
Whenever a man has to win a battle, he has to have perfect control over both arms,
right,
over both fists.
Yes.
Is that right or wrong?
Right.
What controls his arms? His legs? No. What controls his legs? His arms? No. Neither. His head. The head controls both of them. The head keeps these arms coordinated, and the head keeps the legs coordinated. You must have a head in order to have coordination. You must have a head in order to have a rhythm. In fact, you must have a head in order to have even a body, in order to have anything. That's the coordinator. That's the blender. That's the harmonizer. And this is why Allah had to come to America and raise up the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and make him our head. Once the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was placed here as our head, immediately it became his task or mission to coordinate the entire body of 20 million black people here in America. He set up, he has the MGT and the FOI. Left hand, right hand. You don't mind calling left hand. You don't mind being with left hand, do you? Be glad that you're a hand. I'm showing you. I'm listening to you. Some of y'all, if I say it, you say, why he call us left hand? You should be glad to be on the body. Do you hear what I'm saying? Don't never make a why. That's like saying, why do he have to call us women? You can't be a man. I could, if I call you a man, I'd be wrong. No, you're a woman. He's a man. You're a female. He's a male. Am I right or wrong? You're feminine and he's masculine. That don't mean he's better than you, and that doesn't mean you're better than he. Same with the left hand and the right hand. If you train the left hand right, it can do the same thing the right hand can. And vice versa. Is that right or wrong? It all depends upon the development of the members of the body, the development. Of the members of the body is what governs the ability of that particular member. Same with the MGT and the same with the FOI. Same with a sister and the same with a brother. Same with a wife and the same with a husband. The devil during slavery destroyed the masculinity or manhood of the so-called Negro. No man. No man. Right now you got to be trained all over again to be a man.
Right.
So you can't stand up and say to your woman, I'm a man. If you are that, you don't even have to say that.
Right.
What you look like telling someone you're a man?
Right.
You make it sound like you're doubtful.
Right.
I mean, am I right or wrong?
Right.
No. If I had to come in here and tell you that I was a minister, why, good night. You must not know what I am.
Right.
I'd be ashamed to tell you that. If you didn't know that I was that, I would never say it. Because something would be lacking. Is that right or wrong?
Right.
Same way with manhood. When you have to tell someone I'm a man too, why you think so-called Negro have to tell a white man I'm a man same as you? Because you're not a man the same as he. No, this man got factories. Banks. That's what make him a man, brother. When you get the same thing, your woman will say, man. You know that? You come up with a bank. Well, your wife will call you a man all the way across town. You won't never have to tell her you boss. She'll call you boss. Call you daddy and me. Don't never worry about what your brother is thinking about you or what your sister is thinking about you. You worry about what Allah knows about you. See, Allah don't have to think about it. Allah knows. Allah knows your heartbeat. He knows how many times your heart will beat from the day you're born to the day you die. Allah look at you right now and know exactly how many times your heart will beat. I believe you got some scientists in here. And since you all put the sun up in the sky, we want you to straighten out this light. That's what I mean when I say, when brothers come to me asking me way out questions, you may get indignant because I give you an answer to get you off of that. Well, I'm doing you a favor. You have got no business in your right mind intelligently worrying about something way out, and you yet haven't mastered this right here. Do you understand? I may hurt your feelings if you come to me with some of those way out questions. But I'm doing you a favor. I'm giving you justice. I'm bringing you back down to earth. I'm putting your feet on the ground. I'm giving you an aerial, a ground. I'm grounding you. Because you got no business being way out and way in here at the same time. Do you understand? All praise is due to Allah.
Way out and way in here at the same time. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Real Life Radio Show. I'm your host, Jenna, alongside my partner, Roz. There's so many things that have happened this past week. We are going to get into a few of those. We just listened to some of the clips. Hope you enjoyed those. Some of the clips dealing with the Mumba Ali clip. One colonizer calling out another. Right now in 2019, Venezuela, the president said that he was black. And then he told about how the U.S. is interfering in their elections and told them to get out. So there's many things to discuss. And thank you. Let me get back to that. Thank you for joining us tonight. Brother Rise, how are you this evening?
Greetings, greetings. I'm still learning, like you always say. I'm doing good outside of that. How are you?
Still learning.
Yes, sir.
I like those clips you added. But before we get into those, you want to run through the health articles?
Sure. I don't even think I have that many this week. I know I've been getting some things together. Let me just double check.
Yeah, I know the St. John's wart. You had that one. I think that may be the only one.
That's the only one?
Yes.
I think it is. Yes, give me 1 second. I'm going to get to it right now. Excuse me.
You want me to get into this? Scientists say they'll have a complete cancer cure within a year.
Yeah, I just actually got that today, and it was very, very interesting. So, yes, I would stay to read that. I don't even think it's that long, but I think what it's saying is quite quite interesting, to say the least. And with the way that they're developing this supposed cure, it makes logical sense from a health standpoint, but then you're tweaking with things that I'm not sure it's really sensible to tweak with. So, yeah, definitely I want to read it.
All right. Well, Well, while we
you have it up.
Yes, while you getting that together, a few questions.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We just heard the clip about Venezuela.
Yes.
We also heard the clip on the on Italy and France.
Yes.
And haven't we currently been hearing the what do they call the white people in South Africa again?
Afrikaners.
The Afrikaners. Are they still trying to come over here as refugees? That has been died down.
That's kind of, yeah, I was going to say that's kind of died down in the months following that whole big to-do. And I think it was just propaganda to divert everyone's attention, because the truth is they have a home. They're Dutch. They're from the Netherlands. All they have to do is pick up and go back to where their ancestors originally came from if they really wanted to leave. You're going back to where you left to come to Africa to wreak havoc. So that's what I mean when I was saying I think it was more of a diversion tactic for other things that were taking place during that time, because it completely died down. And why would you go from South Africa to America? And I could have seen if something like that happened, I could see them being incorporated right into the police force. So imagine having Afrikaners in certain pockets of the United States policing black areas. That would have been a thought. But yeah, I really think it was a major distraction, because they have a home. They have a place that they came from that they can pick back up and go home to. They know exactly where they came from. So yeah. You're absolutely right. It has died down. And the whole South Africa thing is interesting, because South Africa really ties into Israel as well. Because during the apartheid regime, Israel backed the South African apartheid government and also gave them weapons as well. So these are the same people who always run around claiming that they left Europe to escape the tyranny of the Nazis, but yet they practice Nazism themselves. When you see that they've sterilized like over 50% of the Ethiopian population, we just read the article last week where they talked about paying citizens close to $9,000 to quote hunt and quote capture African immigrants. So these people are practicing what they claim to have run from in Europe. But they were one in the same boat. It was their own people who turned against them and facilitated what it became in the first place. So it's an interesting scenario there with that. But I do have the article up now. All right. Do you have any other questions before I get into it?
Oh, no. Nah, I was just thinking about the just America doing the same thing.
Yeah. I always say that when you see what Israel is and how it came into existence, America was Israel before Israel existed. They just took the same blueprint and applied it in the so-called Middle East. That's it. But the behavior is the same. The only difference is they attempted to eradicate the Palestinians. They weren't successful, or as successful as the Europeans were at eradicating the majority of the indigenous Americans. So that's the only thing where they missed the mark, that the Palestinians were able to get like some semblance of their own space, even under duress and tyranny of an invader that has just dominated in the majority of what was once your ancient space. So
yeah. But it's we have a few more we're gonna dive into, but yeah, go ahead with the article.
Okay, sure. So this is from wakeupworld.com, I believe it is. Yes, St. John's Wort natural support for mental health. With one out of every 10 American adults actively taking an antidepressant, the need to promote mental health through natural means has never been greater. And a healthy organic diet and regular exercise are critical for laying the foundation of healthy living. Herbs like St. John's Wort, Hypernicum perforatum, are a source of antioxidants and other specialized nutrients that encourage physical and mental wellness. In fact, for centuries, people have turned to St. John's Wort as a natural remedy for an array of health concerns. Let's take a closer look at its history and benefits. So I'm not going to read the whole thing. Let me go here. So it says, St. John's wort has shown promise in relieving symptoms of depression. Depression can present itself in many different ways and is often described as a persistent feeling of extreme unhappiness. Left unchecked, it can affect sleep, appetite, energy, cognitive function, and even the immune system. Persistent or major depression is typically due to a chemical imbalance in the brain. Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs, are one of the most commonly prescribed antidepressants. They work by targeting serotonin, an important neurotransmitter that affects mood. SSRIs increase serotonin levels by blocking serotonin absorption in the brain. This, in theory, this can increase the amount of available serotonin and strengthen the part of the nervous system that regulates mood. Unlike an SSRI, St. John's wort inhibits the reuptake or absorption of all neurotransmitters, including monoamine, and dopamine, noradrenaline, and the amino acid neurotransmitter GABA and glutamate. Nearly 30 international studies report that St. John's wort works better than placebo for those experiencing mild to moderate depression. However, other studies found that it is less effective at addressing more severe kinds of depression. More research may bring clarity, but in the meantime, many doctors in Germany recommend St. John's wort to patients who experience mild to moderate depression. It also helps with PMS, helps with menopause, and it has a ton of benefits. My wife used to use it years ago. When she used to have like anxiety issues and whatnot, especially around the time my son was born, she had had some problems with anxiety, and I think it was as a byproduct of the whole pregnancy process. And she actually utilized it. The one caveat I will put out there is that it can cause photosensitivity if you take it for too long. I would say probably use it for like 2 weeks, and then you want to take a break, because what happens is with photosensitivity, when you go out into the light, it's very harsh on your eyes and a very uncomfortable experience. So to avoid that, you don't want to take St. John's wort straight for an extended period of time. Also, another great thing for a lot of the same things that St. John's wort works on without the side effects is CBD. CBD is wonderful for depression. It's great for PMS and all of that stuff. The thing that it works on is phenomenal. And it doesn't get you high. So if you're a person who is not looking to get high, you're just looking to, looking to alleviate certain symptoms in a highly effective way, CBD would be a great way to go as well if you don't have St. John's wort or can't get your hands on it or don't want to use it for that reason. You're just afraid you might end up overusing it in regards to taking it for too long or a period and get photosensitive. Then you can avoid that with CBD as well. So that's it for that particular one. And I'm pretty sure you're right. It's the only health article that I put in there this week. I'll probably have one this week. Uh-oh, I think somebody's on the line.
No, that was me. My fault.
Oh, okay.
That's great, especially. How do you ingest that St. John's wort? I done seen it.
They have pills. You can take like natural pills, okay, with just the actual flower and root. Yeah, capsule. Sometimes they have what's known as time release, which for some people it works really well. You just take, I think it's like two, and it'll time release throughout the day. So it's like a steady dose throughout the day that can just keep you on a nice, even keel as far as anxiety or mood and things like that. If you're a person who suffers with bad cramps or PMS and you have the time release version, it'll alleviate those cramps throughout the day. For people who suffer from that, you can drink chamomile tea. Kava tea is good for that as well. It will help to alleviate cramps and those symptoms. CBD is, like I said, it just works wonders for that too.
We got a matter of fact, we got a health group, BTR. Rise be posting all of these things all the time. Very educational. Let's get to that. You want to get to that scientist before we get to the break?
You said the scientist?
Yeah. Well, let me just go ahead and go through it. I liked it, this one. It was local10.com.
Okay. I'm trying to pull it up now because I was on a different page. Oh, you're talking about the cancer cure one? Yes, I got it. Let me go into that. That's the other one, yeah. I think these are the only two health articles is this one, and I just saw it today and it was kind of interestingly mind-blowing. So this is from news10.com. Scientists say they'll have a complete cancer cure within 1 year. So this is from Tel Aviv, Israel. We believe, quote, we believe we will offer in a year's time a complete cure for cancer, unquote. Those are the words of the lead scientist of an Israeli group that truly believes they will have a cure for all cancers within the next 12 months. And then it says, Dan Oridor of Accelerated Evolution Biotechnologies Limited, or AEBI, says their cure will be, quote, effective from day one, unquote, and with, quote, no or minimal side effects, unquote. WDIV reports that the AEBI's treatment will also come at a lower cost than other treatments that are currently on the market. The treatment is based on a technology which introduces DNA coding for a protein and is essentially a cancer antibiotic. A different team of scientists won the 2018 Nobel Prize for their work with the SOAP technology being used in the treatment. What's even better is AEBI claims future cancer mutations will not damage the effectiveness of the drug. That was one concern too. Quote, we made sure that the treatment will not be affected by mutations. Cancer cells can mutate in such a way that targeted receptors are dropped by the cancer, unquote, said Dr. Ilan Murad to the Jerusalem Post. That is the end of the article. So that's a major thing, because when you're dealing with DNA, the mutation, usually the illness can mutate beyond the DNA of the antibiotic to be effective. So they're saying that that won't be the case with this. And we've dealt with a bunch of occasions, including last week, we had the clip with the doctor that discussed the cancer killing properties of silver as well. So, and again, cancer cannot mutate past silver's ability to kill the cell. Silver actually smothers the cell to kill it, and it cannot mutate past its ability to do so too. So just another thing I wanted to throw out there. So that's it for the health stuff, Jenna. We can move on.
You're listening to Real Life Radio Show. It comes on every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. If you have a question or comment, some of the clips, question for Brother Ryan, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. The number again is 704-802-5056. Press start up. Open up your mic, and we'll get to you as soon as possible. Rise.
Yes,
now,
sir.
Where would you like to start through these clips?
Wow. It was quite a few really, really good ones. I didn't get to take notes on all of them, so when you do your discussion, you might pull up some stuff that that triggers some things I wanted to talk about. I wasn't able to keep up as much as I wanted to make the notes that I wanted to make. So I'm going to start, and I have about six things I noted here. So like I said, you might discuss something, and I'll have something to comment on it as we move ahead. So this would be the clip regarding the Green Book. And I find it to be quite poignant that the woman said that this was a time long ago. She kept like reiterating it, like this was something that was, you know, a while ago, but in the near past. And she said the not so long ago era is what she had called it. And it's interesting because I remember Gus on the Cows had dealt with a book called Sundown Town, and it discusses exactly what she discussed in the video, towns where they basically say if you're not white, you, especially if you're black specifically, you better not have the sun go down on you. Say it again?
Don't let the sun catch you.
Right. Yes, exactly. And I'm thinking, like, there's places in New York City that are still like that. So, and there's places all around the country that are like that. I'm from New York, so I can speak from New York City and the surrounding area. There's parts of Jersey that are like that. I live in Jersey now, but I mean, there is places all over the country that are still like that. So there is no long ago era. We still have people being lynched, being hung 50 feet up in a tree, and then they're still marking it as suicide. And this is all in 2016, 2017. Like, it's still happening now. So I just find that quite telling. And sometimes because we watch these news programs and we've been conditioned to accept what's in the colonizers' media, as being authentically true. A lot of us really believe when we're spoken to in that way and that power of suggestion is put in the mind that this is in the past, a lot of us believe that. And then we go out into the real world and we experience white supremacy in an overt way, and some of us really don't know how to process it because we've really been conditioned to think that, oh yeah, that was a while ago. You know, it used to be like that. Things are so much greater now. And it has changed for the better in a lot of ways. I'm not saying that it's exactly the same as back then, but there's a lot of our people still dying right now for making innocuous quote unquote errors of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. So let's not get fooled into thinking anything else. There's like myriad of stories you can pull up every week that'll give you one of those scenarios playing out in some form or fashion at any time. Also, I think the Green Book clip shows the countrywide codification of Black people. We understood who the enemy was. We understood the danger that they presented to us, even to the point where a Black man has to act as if he's a chauffeur driving his own car and that his wife is a maid with her child in order to safely get through the encounter with the sheriff. And he had his chauffeur hat on tap. So this was something that was a part of a code. So that if you're asked, you're driving a nice car because you're making decent money as a Black male, that you can say, oh, it's my boss's car. Like, think about that. When I came up in an era where, and you did too, Jenna, where to drive the fanciest, flyest car was what a lot of people strive to do, usually through criminal means of crimes of survival, as Scotty so accurately put it. But that was one of the driving forces, was to drive a nice car. And of course, you would get pulled over back in the 80s and 90s if you were driving too nice a car. That stuff was happening then too. But a lot of times, like Neely Fuller said, we were showing off for each other. That was the type of stuff we were doing. And back then, he couldn't think to show off. He had to play a chauffeur in his own vehicle, real deep. Now, the other aspect of that is, think about it today, because there are sundown towns across America. And let's make it hypothetical that you're traveling by car across the United States, which a lot of people do. They'll drive across the country and have these experiences and sometimes have a diary or keep a running tally of what their experiences have been cumulatively throughout the trip, sometimes carrying video, taping through video. And as a Black person, we can't trust each other to even think of doing some of the things that the Green Book used to provide us the ability to do. And even there, you could see that from the Greek family, that there were some white folks who weren't really for the race game either. The people that they talked about happened to be a Greek immigrant who, like they said, served everybody. And his attitude was, if you didn't like it, you can get out. So this was a white person who didn't tolerate that kind of stuff. And at the same time, he also was providing a safe haven for traveling Black people because he understood what the problem was for us as a collective group. Today, we can't even coalesce around the fact that there's a race problem. We argue with each other because I'm a Hebrew Israelite and you're a Christian, or I'm Aboriginal, so I'm not Black and got nothing to do with you Africans, and whatever other ideological tribalism we choose to practice. None of that mattered back then. That's what made the Green Book possible. Nobody asked you, did you bow to Allah before you came to their spot to stay? It was, yo, come and stay here, because we don't want the white folks getting a hand on you in the surrounding area because you might not make it out of here. And I understand that. And Here's my house as a safe haven. And you as a traveler, just loving the fact that you could have a safe place to stay and keep your family when you're traveling. You respected that space. You didn't violate that space. There was no rape happening at these places, just like there was no rape happening on the Underground Railroad. People had a moral consciousness collectively and a code that today we couldn't think of doing because we just can't trust each other. You don't know what you're going to get when you're dealing with another Black person anymore.
Man, that's...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to go ahead and get in on the Green Book, too.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'll take a step back. I want to hear what you have to say.
No, I'm right along with you. But the only thing is, you know, at the end, it was saying that once that book isn't, it'll be a time when that book isn't needed anymore. And it's very much needed. Yeah, it's very much needed right now. Like you say, you got, I don't want to say forgetting of who's the enemy, but just being open with everyone, I guess. You have us
what
being
it is that the enemy has been expanded now. Before,
well, yes.
It was easier to say these people who are oppressing us directly and overtly as well as covertly are the enemy. You can tell your child if this person is white, suspect that they can be practicing, that they can practice racism on you. Like this was a part of our natural environment. Now, so many of our own people have been indoctrinated into this whole thing, which that other Nearly Full of clip we'll get to next week deals with the fact that you don't, a lot of us don't want to get rid of racism. We don't.
Well,
some
well,
of us
now,
are
you,
just happy
you know
with
what it,
the way they are. And we just want to replace the white person.
Well, I guess.
And dominating everybody else. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I guess you mean in mass. But before we get to that, I want to get back to the Green Book.
Please do.
What I was saying is that it ain't enough of us. It done been co-opted. That's the first thing I thought about. Like, I knew about the Green Book, but when I seen this video, that was the first thing that I thought about. Everything that we do gets co-opted and changed into something else. That's what the Airbnb is now. But of course, it's been co-opted, and now we use a new form of the Green Book to go get mistreated now, though. That's the difference.
Yeah, because a lot of Airbnb turn out to practice racism, too. And on top of them doing that, because I've dealt with articles about that in the past, they also record a lot of people in their homes. So you staying in the house, and you might not even know that they got cameras all over the place. And I don't know. I've never heard of any stories of them recording people in the shower, but who's to say they're not doing that, too? You got all kind of creeps, weirdos, and freaks, and you sleeping in someone else's house. So you don't know what's going on in that space while you're there. Somebody could be flipping on a computer, flipping on a camera while you're there, changing your clothes. You have no idea. And they're making, let's say, porn videos, homemade style. Just, you know, people staying in my Airbnb and I'm getting my freak on when I, you know, watch these videos. Like, you don't know what you're dealing with anymore. So it's a lot, brother. It give you a lot of pause for thought. But you're right. That is like the modern, quote unquote, more advanced version of the Green Book. The difference is that you're not getting the understanding of the receiving party knowing the reason why their services are necessary.
Well, a lot of times,
go ahead.
A lot of times we don't know the origins of how we use things anyway. So, you know, it's a complete cycle. It happens and then it comes back around, but. One thing I've been thinking about is that the refinement. I hadn't heard that so much until I listened to the cows. But the refinement, it's repeating itself. Small changes here and there. Why isn't there a large amount of us paying attention to that? If it keeps on happening in the same way. At least that one particular part, we should be able to break the cycle of at least that part, shouldn't we?
I think it's Stockholm Syndrome. I think it's precise, persistent psychosocial conditioning via propaganda and media. I think it is our people being conditioned intergenerationally to move away from understanding the struggles of our elders. There's a huge disconnect with each generation with the prior generation.
That's always somewhere in the argument too.
Yeah, and this is engineered. This is not by accident. Because remember when we heard Dr. Edward Robinson, may he rest well, discussing the fact that when they got the guy from England, the slave owners here got the guy from England, I believe he was from England, I know he was from Europe, to help them understand the best way of breaking their slaves. And he talked about the fact that his third great grandmother was like an Igbo who was kidnapped and brought here. And she was able to tell her story and their story from Africa here to his, who became his grandmother, which is how he knew who he was, where his ancestors came from. And the guy who came from Europe told the slave masters, do they know that they're from the Songhai Empire? Then the slave master said, yes. Do they know how great their people are? They said, yes. Do they know that you know, their people put up valiant fights against slavery. They said, yes. They said, then that, he said, that's your problem. He said, I'm going to tell you what you do. If you have a woman that's pregnant on the slave ship coming here, when she gets here, the moment she gives birth, you ship the child to the other side of the country on a different plantation and you work her to death. So the child never knows anything about where it comes from, and you can tell it whatever you want, reshaping the entire consciousness of a people in one generation. So this was pre-planned. This was stuff that was ordained. Remember when I dealt with King Leopold's letter to his missionaries discussing the use of Christianity to do the same thing. And one of the main things he said is turn the child against the parent. Make it so that the priest's word is more powerful than his mother's and father's word.
Yeah, but
so this is a planned thing that's just playing itself out. And because we now have so much access to information, it's information overload, because there's no rhyme or reason to the quality of the information. So you have a bunch of ideological tribalists just finding stuff that agrees with what their mind tells them is true. And whether it's true or not, they don't research it. They just say, oh, this backs up my side of the thing. This backs up my side of the thing. And they build a whole ideology and a movement behind stuff that's false. This is the world we're in now. A lot of this stuff didn't exist then. So as a result, it was easier to stay focused because you're reading books, you're reading written text. There wasn't this information overload infusion that we're dealing with today. So only people who really put in the time and diligence in their research, or if they have connections to elders that come from that cloth of doing actual research, and they show you those techniques and talk to you about those things, and you put those things to good use, you'll be able to filter through a lot more of the BS to get to the root of things. And when you present things, you can properly back them up with accurate sources. But the majority of us don't do any of that. So as a result, we just have information overload and ideological tribalism. So all of these things play in together to create what we're dealing with right now, as far as what you were discussing and asked me about. Sorry if I went all around the mulberry bush, but and that's just a few of the factors, but those were the main ones I wanted to touch on as to why the colonizer can continue to do pretty much the same thing with slight tweaking, and it has the same effect on us. There's so many black people that will kill you in defense of a white person today that sometimes just even presenting accurate information to them is an impossibility, because they'll argue you down or even want to fight you because they're defending the same people who have made both of our lives unpleasant on a daily basis. So, I'll end it there.
Man, I guess I just go to the to my next point then, because that was enough. And it slips right, it goes right into the next subject. Mm-hmm. We was talking about, my next subject. And I wanted to discuss this with Italy calling out France. It's a great Absolutely. Thing because it's being put on a national, to let everyone know, I guess that is what I'm trying to say. But everyone always known that. It's kind of like when Donald Trump says something, and at least everybody that I know, let me say that. And these are not necessarily super, super intelligent people. They're not real stupid. I mean, just ordinary people. And even mm-hmm. they knew some of the things that he says, but white people tend to just deny altogether. And that's how I see this Italy telling on France to say. But what happens to those immigrants that's coming into Italy, all the ones that's getting put back into slavery, beaten mm-hmm. and mistreating? You know, that part, they leave those type of details out. But
well, to me, they just open the door for different European countries to start telling on each other, just putting it all out there, because the Africans can't do anything about it. each one of those countries that they colonized, all of the countries that colonized the African countries all have military bases in those same countries. So you have a living threat from your colonizer on your soil that you have not been able to get rid of. So to me, you can just have a free-for-all of people just telling on each other that, you know, this one's still facilitating colonization through these practices, and this country's doing that through these practices. And the interesting thing about it, though, is that what I see it as, just taking a Dr. Welsing-esque approach, is a conversation on genetic annihilation. They said, let's go to the cause. Why are all these Africans coming to our country and taking over them in vast numbers, or seemingly vast numbers that are building quite rapidly in certain European countries? And they're like, well, let's get to the root, because think about it. The more Africans you have, the more potential for genetic mixing. And you know that Italy already has a population that's dying off. All of these countries are trying to get white people to mate with their women, not Africans. And you know that in a lot of these European countries, a lot of these women love black men. The same thing used to happen. I remember it happened in Germany after the World War. A lot of those African soldiers actually liked Germany so much that they stayed. And the German women went crazy over them. One of the main things that they did, I have a documentary on it about the black Germans. They said that anywhere between the age of 14 and 16, they would send German officers to your house, if you were a male, collect you in the morning, take you to a sterilization facility where they would castrate you. They would basically cut your testicles off without anesthesia. And they interviewed one of the guys who went through that, and he told the story of being woken up in the wee hours of the morning, like 4:30, maybe 5 in the morning, and them taking him there and doing that to him. And he said that they did that across the board because they didn't want black men sleeping with the white women. And he talked about it in the video, that the white German women were enamored with the African men because these were the guys who were fighting in the war. So they were so, you know, taken with them and their bravery and their black skin, that it was just a darn near free for all. I had a friend who used to work at Bad Boy Records in the 90s, and he was actually stationed in Germany. And he said the same thing in the 90s. He said the German women, he said they knew our history better than we did. He said he learned more from the Germans he came in contact about African history than he learned here. He said they know the real history over there. They know more of it than we do. And he said a lot of them really like us. He said the racism's there too, but he said it's, especially with the females, it's like that. So it's all, to me, it's a genetic annihilation thing and a nationalism thing playing itself out, just due to the fact that they're trying to get to the root cause of what's causing the exodus, mass exodus off of the African continent into Europe, and it's actually creating this flood of black genetic material close at hand to their women, and these are populations that are dying off and don't have enough procreation happening. So there's a lot that goes into that idea of mine, but that's the direction I'm going with it.
No, I agree, and that's why I was saying the title and what's being said, that's one aspect.
Yeah.
But like you stated, what's the real reason? What's going on? So it's that man, that part right there. A flood of black genetic material.
Yes.
Want to move on to the next clip that I was wanting to discuss, because you put this one in there, sure. And it was we cut it off a little short, but I would like for you to give the rest of that, because it was something else in there that you wanted us to hear. But the one where the brother was at the gates, where he was discussing all of the talk online about the how did the slave trade, excuse me, I'm combining my thoughts. They was discussing how did the slave trade still have a lingering effect on Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. They took a lot of young folks, but they also took a lot of people who were quite experienced and master craftsmen. Because, I mean, you can't have people build a country that don't know how to build a country. So So you had a lot of young people, like a majority of them too, because they were being abused and sexually exploited and all kinds of stuff. But you also had a lot of really, really great African minds. And in some cases, matter of fact, they took whole priesthood. I know that there was, I'm trying to remember the deity now, but there's deities that from the Yoruba tradition of Nigeria and Benin, where there's certain deities they no longer worship in Africa because the entire priesthood was brought into slavery here. And those deities are worshipped in the West, but not worshipped on the continent anymore. So that's what I mean, just as an example. And what he was talking about was just the fact that with the sheer number, the sheer amount of people that died and the sheer amount of people that have been moved around the world, that Africa will never really fully recover. And that's true, because all you can do, like he said, is try to do your best to catch up, but you'll never be back at that full 100%. And I think the way of facilitating that is getting the global African population, diaspora, and everyone able to work together around solving problems. If we can do that, which I think is slowly starting to happen in different ways, there's things happening that are just interesting as they unfold. And of course, it's not going to be perfect. Of course, we're not going to all ever unify. I think that's impossible. And there's just too many of us that actually like things the way they are because of the benefits we get. So with those things being true, it would just have to be critical masses of us that come together, understanding that we need to solve problems. And the best way to do it is to do it collectively and coalesce around problem solving, not around any other things, but problem solving. The other thing that he said that we missed in the video, but I do want to speak about, I think we touched on it before we came on live, was the fact that when he was asked at one point, how did the slave trade first start? And the brother actually said that what he had learned was that in the very beginning, the kings were told that they were going to take Africans to Europe to teach them a trade. They were teaching them how to make things that Africans could trade with Europe. So he said that the kings thought that the groups they were sending to Europe were going to go learn a trade, come back to the continent, and then teach that trade to other Africans so that they can establish trade with the Europeans by creating goods that the Europeans liked and could use. That's what a lot of them thought when they initially started sending people out.
Roz, you know what? Let's just finish that one up so we can just hear it.
Okay. Yeah.
That's sure. The real problem. And this will be a common fight. A single president cannot stand up and say that we're going to fight against this, we're going to change everything. No. They know that this thing has done bad things to us, has great impact on our development, but to change things, they are still touched. That's the real problem.
Yeah, so we're at the point of no return in Ouidah, Benin. This is actually my third time coming here. This is where the Voodoo Festival will be held January 10th. So, you know, I'm going to be documenting and shooting it. My brother Richard is going to be showing me around, so hope you guys enjoy the content. Wow. I can only imagine what our ancestors went through on that voyage to the New World.
Those who work on the architecture of this, their names.
Okay.
The participants, people who make the architecture.
Here, Richard, what does this symbolize? Do you know?
No. I can just say a king there. Okay, and I can see the white European sheep.
Right.
And then I can see some slaves.
Okay.
So it may be the what is being said here is that the king is selling some slaves to Europeans.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we can see here.
Do the kings or like the descendants of the kings ever express regret for the role they played in the slave trade?
Yeah, you know that kingdom has never been the way it used to be before colonialism.
Right.
So even today, saying that we have kings, it is difficult. After the defeat against the French, you know. Anyway, when we listen them speak, they regret.
They regret it.
They regret. And I would like you not to confuse something. Most people used to confuse Vodun chiefs,
right,
or priests, with kings.
Correct. They're not. Yes, nothing, correct.
No comparison. Mm-hmm. They have nothing common as far as slave trade is concerned.
They might have practiced voodoo, but yeah, they weren't voodoo chiefs.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's the real problem. So the kings are there and control the whole city. So they are the one who decide. And even the slaves they sold, they are captives of tribal wars.
So, then last question.
Yeah.
Why would they sell black slaves to people that didn't look like them? Why would they sell? Why do you think in the king's mind it would be okay to sell African captives to white people? Like, what are your thoughts
on
that?
No, what me I was taught when I was at school, what I was taught is that when the white man came here first, it was an idea of bringing some Africans. Because they came with some articles, mirrors, wrappers, pipes, things like that. And in the mind of the first king, it was like bringing some Africans to learn how to make, to produce those things. That's what Mia was taught.
Okay, so the kings thought they were going to Europe to learn how to learn it and then bring it back.
Those things, yeah.
Oh,
but
okay.
Africans were reluctant. They were reluctant to follow white people to leave their family. So the king was obliged to force people. That's what the first. But with the time, people realized that, oh, that was not the real issue. Mm-hmm. But, you know, within king, it is almost everywhere, jealousy.
Right.
And things, because you know that, they will not say that, oh, these things, as he has more relationship with Europeans, he has some articles, some... I don't know, wealth, he has riches, and so his condition is better. Then, what happens? Among themselves, there are some tribal wars. But the slaves were not treated the way they have been treated during slave trade.
Okay.
Because as slave, you can own land, you can own family. But the only problem is that your king has no longer power on you. You are under another king.
Wow.
You see?
I understand. Clearly understand. So they didn't experience the conditions that we experienced on the plantation in America.
No. That's not the fault. That's not what happened. So that's what I can tell you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some of that I don't know about. I had to do some more digging to find out about that. Thinking they was going to learn a trade, I believe that may have been the first time that I've heard that one before, Rouse. But
yeah, I've actually heard that before. I've heard that when things first started, it was not thought that they were going to be taken and enslaved. And matter of fact, there was a great article that was put out not too long ago on Face to Face Africa that dealt with the reason why the Dahomey Kingdom abandoned their slave fighting, because they had a valiant history of actually fighting slavers and slave catchers before they went the opposite direction. And what they did in the article is they basically went to the cause of what caused the shift from actually fighting European colonization and slavery to actually becoming some of the biggest traders in slaves. And what it was, which happened to a lot of kingdoms, was that they realized they didn't have the weapons to actually continue to fight. And the king realized he needed guns. And the only way he was able to get guns from Europeans was by selling other human beings. And that was the beginning of their transition. And it was done, in his mind, to protect his people from going through what they were doing to others and what he ended up facilitating being done to others. And of course, after a while, you know, the reasoning goes out the window and it just becomes a business. So therein, they have this horrific history, but they actually started off fighting slavery quite successfully, but they didn't have the weaponry to continue doing so in a way that would protect them from going through, to coming to the same thing. So, yeah, I did hear of that. There's a couple of different things that I heard about the very beginning of the slave trade. It wasn't like they just came up in there and kidnapped folks. They already had relationships with Europeans for like over 500 years. They were trading with Europeans, with Portuguese and whatnot. So a lot of these trades, like, it was a lot of things seemed innocuous in the beginning. And as the Europeans got the foothold, and as the tribes were being turned against each other, that's when all of the treachery happened and everything just kind of spun out of control. And then when you deal with the article on the Kingdom of Dahomey, then eventually you had different tribes that had the same idea. I need to get my hands on guns. And it would be, prudent to do that. You are now live with on Real Life, the radio show with myself, Rob, and my co-host, Jenna Keprock. We are on Black Talk Radio Network, the foundational radio network. If you wish to call in and make a comment or ask a question, please give us a call at 704-802-5056. Again, that's 704-802-5056. And press ** if you wish to ask a question or make a comment. Watch your background noise, please. Thank you very much.
No, Scotty. It ain't working for me.
Okay, that's probably because you don't have a main account. But good evening, fellas. I wanted to chime in on what Ross was talking about, because I'm over here while I'm listening on Twitter, calling out some of these black women giving the Cosby pound cake speech in defense of Kamala Harris locking up parents for a child's truancy, you know. And so how does that, what am I talking about? I'm talking about classism. Yes. So my studies of slavery in Africa is they had a caste system or classism in Africa as well. Yes. We like to think that, well, I ain't gonna say we like to think, but I believe that our perception of the slave trade in Africa is that you just had a bunch of Europeans and Arabs running up in Africa with guns and just snatching people out, you know, out the bush. And that's what was happening.
Right.
No, they were going to those who were kings. You know, I think I heard the name, the Kingdom of Dahomey. Yes. Which had been practicing slavery before they came into contact with Europeans. So them Europeans was not going on raiding parties of these villages and snatching folks up. No, they were purchasing them from the powerful kings and kingdoms who did the raiding. You know, I had seen this promotion about these two black actresses was supposed to be in this movie about the Amazon warrior women. Well, a lot of people don't know that, but that was the Kingdom of Dahomey. And many of those women had been captured themselves from other neighboring tribes and whatnot, and forced into that army life and what have you. And I see that playing out right now. I got these PhD Negroes on Twitter, Soros or frat boys or whatever, on there blasting saying, hey, being poor ain't no excuse for parenting or making sure your kid is in school. And like I just told one of them, my mom was a single parent, okay? She's a single parent raising us, was working a first shift job when I was in high school. My sophomore year, I missed over 40 days of school, but still made the honor roll because I showed up during tests. You know what I'm saying? I showed up during tests, and my test scores was so high that they couldn't fail me, okay? Because I passed the course because I knew the information. All I do is just read the chapter that we're doing the test on or whatever. And math is math. You know what I'm saying? Science is science. But that other stuff, I just read it, man. I had that kind of memory where I would get the answers correct. All right. So I said to her, I was bigger than my mom when I was in the South. And she didn't know I was skipping school like that. Man, we would catch the bus, go to school, go to the parking lot with one of my homeboys who had a car, and then we off to the store to buy some beer and go chill on the doggone river bank. You know what I'm saying? And so my mom should have been locked up because I was a rebellious teenager. So we see that caste system playing out right now, man. You know, and it's exemplified by that Cosby Pound Case speech. Thank you for allowing me to chime in.
Appreciate what you said. Thank you so much, Scotty. What you said is so accurate, and our stories are so similar. I had a photographic memory, too. I've talked to Jenna about that. Even my wife has talked to him about that. And that's what got me through a lot of school, too, because I did a whole lot of cutting. I know exactly what you mean. Now, the interesting thing is that that these people are saying that the parent should be should go to jail because the child is not going to school. Now, the thing is that people who talk like that are people who don't live that life. That's not their background. So they can't conceive of anything outside of what their life story is, which is a lot of other people's stories are vastly different from folks who come from, let's say, a stable two-parent Black family. So a lot of times your context only is your life. And it's only once you step out of the comfort zone of your house and your family existence to go out in the world and have different experiences that you start to encounter other people whose lives don't mirror yours. And then you start to say, well, oh, everybody doesn't live like this. No, everybody doesn't live like this. And that goes both ways. You might come from a horribly impoverished background, and then you go out into the world and maybe end up going to college, and you come across and you might rub elbows with some affluent or upper middle class people. And you're like, wow, there's people who live like this, and I come from that. You start to gain or broaden your scope just by traveling and having life experience outside of the context of whatever area you come from or what block you grew up on. And to me, everything Scotty said is accurate. I don't think there's a place on earth that didn't have a caste system or class system at some point. It's just at how that class system applies to the lowest people on the totem pole. And to me, that's what dictates the greatness of a society or of a people, is how they treat their most vulnerable. That would be mostly women, children, and people who are less fortunate. So that's why even when I talk about Gaddafi and the fact that he made sure that every one of his citizens had a house before he had a house and his family had a house. That's what he did. He made sure every citizen had a place to live, and he lived in a tent with his family until every citizen had a place to live. When you would go to school, he would allow the children in his country to have the pick of the litter globally, whatever school they want to go to. And he would give them a full ride, pay for everything. But like Dr. Clark said, he told them, I'm sending you to get an education to come back to Libya so that you can help improve home. I'm not sending you to find love in the arms of any white woman if you're going to Europe or any place else you're going. Your job is to come back here and improve what we have. That's what he used to do. He also, if you were getting married, he would give the married couple $40,000 to start their new married life. This is stuff that's documented happening in Libya before they murdered the man.
We done discussed it a few times.
You know, these are the types of things, like when Scotty talks about classism and the effect that it has. You have sometimes folks that think no different than the colonizer because their lifestyle might be more similar to affluent colonizer's lifestyle. So they don't think like a Black person. They might come across racist experiences and have those things, but they're able to completely ignore that because they think, which I hear a lot of Black people think, say that they believe that money is going to solve whatever problems they have until they encounter racism, even while they have money. Then it's like, oh, okay, I think I might get
that's
it.
What,
go ahead, Jenna. You going to say something?
That's where the wake-up call come in at. We have a caller.
What's
your name? Where you calling from? What's your question or comment?
Peace. It's Cujo from NYC.
Greetings, Cujo.
Greetings. Again, thank you guys for the platform. That was a lot you guys covered, man. Really good show. The Malcolm X speech, excellent. I don't think many people have heard that. I probably heard it myself once. But I think it's timely because a lot of the things that are going on, Scotty just spoke about Kamala Harris
And then we have the Women's March that just occurred. We have a lot of things going on with the relationship between us as in the community with our women, and it's important that we start communicating with them so that they actually see that in the realm of racism, white supremacy, their skin color comes before their gender. And I think that they're starting to get the idea now. Like, I mean, I don't know how else it could happen, because
conscious
the Women's March
over feminism.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're starting to see this. And I think that the sister Tamika Mallory, just, I mean, there was something that I would suggest people, like, just take a look at some of the things and interviews that she's had to have since that situation. And even on Roland Martin, I don't even want to give him that much play, but just watch that and watch her on The View and see how people talk to her and address her. And also, one of the things I think was interesting, and this was by Jason Black. He made a very good point. He said, unfortunately, when you see her on both of those shows, mm-hmm. you see two different people, because when she's around us, she acts very different compared to the way she acts when she's around white people. And it's a lot of it has to do with the fact that she's involved with that whole, what Dr. Curry spoke about. Again, you guys put this in real good context, that whole aspect of intersectionality, the feminist mm-hmm. movement. She's a part of that whole conglomerate, and it's confusing. You know what I'm saying? It's confusing, because white women will ride with you for gender all day, but the minute you start talking about, like, slavery and all these other things, it's over.
Absolutely.
It's over. You know, they're going another direction. So I think that this is timely, and this could hopefully start some kind of conversations within our so-called communities, you know, because we have to start that divide has to be taken off the plate. It has to be taken care of, so to speak. But again, man, great show. I really like that. And by the way, Ross, I tried that oregano diluted.
Yeah.
And that's strong. Yo, that's strong, man. Yo, man.
It works, man. I'm telling you.
Yo.
It is strong. That's why I said, like, 2 drops max. You don't want to go anywhere over 2 drops. Well,
yo,
man, one, because it's super powerful. Yeah, damn,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Man. Whoa, man, you gotta put a disclaimer on that next time, man. That was
no
that
problem.
Was
my bad, because it's kind of bitter. It's a bitter herb.
Yeah, man, eyes watering and everything, man. Word
oh
up.
My God, oh. It probably killed every germ in your body too. Lord have mercy. Oh man, did it help though?
Oh, absolutely, man. Much appreciated,
okay, cool.
Man.
Got, no problem. I'll say do one drop there, because I know oregano is not a game. It's seriously not a game, but it can work wonders for you on so many
oh, yeah.
levels, and especially your immune system. So, yeah, I'm glad you tried it. Lord, just
yeah,
one drop.
Man. Just one drop.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Yeah, one drop in all a glass right. of tea or something, you should be good.
Yes, sir. Gentlemen, but again, man, good show. Really like the way you guys line things up. You know, I'll fall back, man. Thank you. Let other
thank
people
you.
Speak.
No, Peace. Thank you. Thank you, Cujo.
Thank you very much. We greatly appreciate that. And I think he pointed out something really, really great in regards to dealing with the issue of feminism and how it's been used, you know, to manipulate our women towards having an ideology against their own best interests without them being aware of it at this particular point. And the thing is that to destroy a nation, you destroy the family. And I think they've done such a great job at creating enmity between black males and black females that it's going to take a whole lot of us really, really being patient and understanding with each other in order to facilitate growth towards unifying around solving problems. It's going to take a lot. But go ahead. I know we have another caller, too. I think it might be Brother Otis.
No, I don't think so. But your mic is open, Big O, if you do have something to add. But that right there, man, I think tonight's show was it just encompassed the whole King of Leopold letter. Young
yes.
against the old. Male against the female.
Men against the woman. Yep. Everything. And it's to me, the greatest way to thwart the machinations of the people that dominate you is to understand what they're doing to dominate you. And enough of us, you know, Neely Fuller says it all the time, we don't make racism, white supremacy, and understanding it our priority. We find everything else to pay attention to, everything else to argue about. You know, we love to show off in front of other Black people. We love to argue with other Black people. Some of us love to mistreat and even kill other Black people. But we don't coalesce around the fact that we are in a situation where we're completely subjugated, we're captured people, we are dominated people, and that we have to coalesce around problem solving, not what color we look like, not how Black someone is or how Black someone isn't, not any other ideology that you can think of, because there's so many of them, I don't even want to go into all of that nonsense, that really destroys our ability to make headway in solving the problem. We have one major problem that if we can work towards solving that, it'll give us the drive and the impetus to start solving all the other problems. But the main problem is being dominated. And we have to be able to coalesce around not wanting to be dominated.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, go ahead.
Some info. I spoke about this in on the Cal's compensatory call-in, but they're trying to open 4 new jails in New York City. I don't know if you heard about this, Ross. They're trying to open 4.
And the fact that... Right?
Yes, correct.
Yes.
And these are not like 4 or 5 story. They're talking 40 story buildings in each borough. Now, crime has been down more than any other year. Like last year was like record in 70 years, crime has never been this low. And they're trying to build jails, but the reality is crime is down. So who's going to be occupying these jails? I mean, we all know who. Now, the thing is, there was in Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn, they had a town hall forum. So I said, let me go out and I'll go check this out. When I went and I checked it out, I mean, we saw there was some of us there, but the majority was a mixture of white people, you know, gay, lesbian, anti-sexual, whatever you may want to call it. Indian people. I mean, it was just this whole collage. And I kind of was like, at first, I was like, you know what? Let me not judge. I want to see who it is, what they speak about. And the panel spoke. Not one person on the panel mentioned racism, white supremacy. Not one of them.
And where was this? Capital. It was in Boreham Hill?
This was in Bed-Stuy. This was like off of Nostrand and Fulton. And
okay.
at the Restoration. And they didn't mention it at all. They completely avoided it, you know. And I could tell I was probably one of the older people there that was a Black male. I was, and one of the only. I mean, there were probably like 3 heterosexual Black males there, straight up, you know. So it was just bananas, including my son, by the way.
Wow.
So it's like I'm listening to the conversation and the dialogue. But they're not talking about what it is. And I felt like because there are white people in the room that probably donated or gave money to their cause or to this movement, they're not going to talk about it. Because ultimately, they talked about white privilege and all this other stuff. And quite frankly, it just made no sense to me because I realized, I said, they're still trying to figure out how to go about this. They don't really know. You know?
I'm going to say this. If you don't mind me interjecting, what I'm thinking too is the fact that the reason that these other groups could come to a place like Bed-Stuy, because that's where my wife has her business, and it's gentrified at an astronomical rate right now.
Hell yeah.
What it is that it's racism, white supremacy that opened the door and paved the road for them to be able to gentrify an area. So how are you going to speak against the hand that fed you? If it wasn't for white supremacy, those areas would not be gentrified at all, because it's wherever white people go, the money goes. And white people want to live closer to their jobs in Manhattan, and they want to have it as accessible as possible. So that's why the prices have gone up. And I think there was over 1 million black people that left in like the last, I think, 10 to 15 years. I read an article a few months back saying that. So New York City has had one of the biggest drops in its black population in its modern history. And right. what it is that the other immigrants, the East Indians, there's a whole slew of Chinese, especially in Fort Greene, I'm seeing them, and it's just growing. And what it is that the same thing that set the precedent for them to do that, because now they're coming with their own money. And what does money do? Follow the people with the money. So the Chinese are coming in, they got money. So where they're at in Fort Greene, they got all the nice big name stores, all the big natural food products. There's no food deserts, none of that. East mm-hmm. Indians, same thing. It's happening in Jersey too. So that's the thing, is that that system of white supremacy works both ways, depending on the monetary stability that a group can bring into an area. It has the same effect as if white people move back into the area. It's just that it's a different group, maybe from a different ethnic stock, from a different country. They might be non-white, but the effect is the same.
So we're talking about that class system what, that classes, Scotty was
absolutely.
Mentioning.
Absolutely, yeah.
Go ahead, Cujo.
No, what you said was really on point. With the dividing of the elders and the male and the female, the young, I mean, because I was one of the older black men there, and I'm not that old. These kids, they're like, to me, they're kids, they're like 20-something, 25, 20. You could tell they're in their 20s, you know? And they're using all the catchphrases, intersectionality, white privilege, white male privilege. They're using all those catchphrases, but they're not really getting to the point. And right. What I did, I went up to the mic and I spoke. I said, you guys have to start using the right terminology. And when I said that, like, people kind of went silent because there were white people in the room. And I said, absolutely. Look, you got to call it what it is.
Dynamic. Yeah.
Change it. Yeah. And they did not. I mean, I could tell the way they looked at me. Like, they looked at me like, oh, here comes this old school dude. Talk about racism, white supremacy, hate the white man. Like, they mm-hmm. already categorized that phrase and categorized us, you know, we get the Hotep label, we get the radical black man, you get all these labels that are very difficult to shake. So when I deal with those situations, when people try to typecast me, categorize me, I write that off real quick, because I know that deals with, they have a certain perspective of what those type of individuals come to and bring to the table. And in their mind is hate. But when I'm not talking about hate, I'm just talking about straight up equality. You're talking about justice.
You know, I got to interject again. What you're talking about is intellectual colonization, because the terms that you use are terms they learn in college. So the confusion is being taught. It's no different than when you go to college, they're not teaching you to become a critical thinker, a person who's going to think towards entrepreneurship, a person who's going to think towards upward mobility for your collective group of people in the area that you live in. They want you to be a good worker. They want you to get out and then become a slave to someone on someone else's plantation to make them rich. And they don't want you thinking critically about anything. And what you saw there was the disconnect between what they learned in college, because once you get that piece of paper, a lot of us, especially black folks, a lot of us, not all, but a lot of us tend to think that it gives, you know, qualifies any and everything you have to say on the topic, that you have a degree. Not understanding that when you've been intellectually colonized, it's the colonizer that sets the level of what your intelligence is by way of that piece of paper. He's telling you everything. You've learned everything the way I told you that I want you to learn it. That's what that piece of paper says. The
yes.
real education starts when you leave the building and you start to live real life and learn and read on your own and start dissecting some of the things that you were colonized with intellectually. So what you saw was intellectual colonization fighting back in defense of the enemy, because it don't even take a room full of white people. All it takes is one white person in the room and the entire dynamic will shift away from race immediately, because that is the conversation that is not, that the slave master will not allow. They're not going to tolerate that.
Yo, they
and on
like
a subconscious level, they understand that. So their response was like, oh, here he come with that old school stuff, this, that, and the third. It's because they have been intellectually colonized into intersectionality is what it is. LGBTQ rights is what it is. All these things that white people taught them is what it is. And you're coming with, we need to deal with racism, white supremacy.
Hey, unfortunately, I have to go to work. So we are at our 5-minute mark. Man, we will continue this next week. It's a, few of those clips I didn't go over, but before I pass it to you for your closing thoughts and giving the prayer, I'd like to thank the callers first and foremost for participating. One of the things that I try to do with these clips is that all of them run together. As far as they interchange with male and female, let's say for the information, like what Malcolm was talking about doing as far as the women. Well, we also as men have to make some of those adjustments as well. I can't remember the woman's name with let me check that out real quick.
It was James Baldwin and, oh my gosh, her name's on the tip of my tongue.
Nikki Giovanni. Nikki Giovanni.
Nikki Giovanni. Thank you. Yes.
Giovanni. Yes. That would be the same way as far as sometimes instead of telling someone how horrible and miserable they are, or they make you, sometimes just tell them it's okay. Can't do that all the time. Let's not make it a habit, but sometimes it's needed, because just like she said, we all, if we have to work for somebody, we do it to them every day. And then we go back home and take it out on the people we say we love. And I think that's the same way it happens as a collective group of people. You stated earlier, Roz, that we'll mistreat each other and even have fun killing each other and have all the utmost respect for anybody else. These are some of the small things that we need to change. Hope you enjoyed these clips. If you will, you give your... you give your closing statements and hit us with the prayer. And once again, thank y'all for participating.
Yes, thank you to Brother Cujo. Thank you to Scotty. Thank you to Brother Otis. I see you there. We greatly appreciate you. I think you set the precedent with what you stated. It's really about us getting past the nuances of trash that's been put in front of us. We have bread and circus. The circus is everything on the internet, everything on the TV that's taking your attention away from doing something constructive. The bread is the minimal little bits of welfare we might get that when nobody's getting now because the government shut down while they just temporarily opened it. But the bottom line is that we're being distracted with things to take our minds away from understanding that we have a problem that needs to be solved. And this is really, if you see the ratcheting up of this, this is because these people know that their time is up. There's so many signs that things are going in that direction, but there's so many signs that there's a lot of work to do as well. And we just have to continue on our grind and doing that work and focus on respecting each other and being as patient and understanding with each other as we can. Sometimes it's hard to do. We all human, so we have our attributes that are not always pleasant, myself included. So we have to learn to control those things because it's true. We have a double consciousness. W.E.B. Du Bois wrote about that in his book, The Soul of Black Folk. There's a face that we have when we're dealing with our colonizer, and there's a face that we have when we come home and deal with our family. Now, if you can look a person in the face and skin and grin at them because they're providing you that paycheck that you sustain your family with, even though they mistreat you or abuse you or may not talk to you in a respectful manner, you mean to tell me you can't go home to your wife who might have been working hard herself, has her own issues that she doesn't choose to discuss with you because in her mind, your issues supersede hers emotionally and she needs to provide that support for you in her mind so she chooses not to speak about her issues, that you can't do that for her sometimes? Maybe not make it a habit like Jenna said, but every now and then, yeah, everything's all right. And it may not be. I had to learn that. I've been with my wife now, my son's 23, 24 years. It'll be 25 years in the next few months. And it seemed like just yesterday. And I had so much to learn about being a father, because I didn't have one, and about certain aspects of being a husband. And I thank my father-in-law for that. I love that man eternally for the role that he played in my growth and development. It doesn't negate that my father did have some influence, quite a big influence on the trajectory that I took in life. But ultimately, he helped me understand those nuances that Jenna brought up in that discussing that video with Nikki Giovanni and James Baldwin. So I'll end it there. Thank you so much for chiming in, Brother Scotty. Thank you so much as well for chiming in, Brother Cujo. Thank you for all the calls and listeners for spending your Tuesday evening with us. We greatly appreciate you. I will now say the prayer.
Go ahead. Just for those who are listening now and those that listen to the podcast later, I have a question, if you will, indulge me. Don't even have to answer, but it'll be great for you to call in and answer the question next week. But just think to yourself. I was just discussing, presenting the question, we have begun to see these things in motion. Just from reviewing history and what have you, we see these things happening. What can we do to interfere with this system of white supremacy as far as taking out a good chunk if we see the same patterns? Rhetorical question, maybe. But go ahead, Roz. My apologies.
No problem. Great question. I'm going to look forward to discussing that next week myself. So, yes, we do have to get out of here, sadly, but because I do enjoy doing this program and appreciate all the calls and listeners. So we're going to close out now and ponder on that question. And hopefully some people will call in and be able to go into their understanding and answering of that question. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient, extremely patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another Black person. Like Gus so eloquently says, it has been time. Let's replace white supremacy with justice ASAP, and let's end the prison industrial complex and human trafficking. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Once again, thank you for spending your Tuesday evening with us. Please stay safe, stay out of the hands of slave catchers, and stay warm, because we're about to hit some real serious Arctic temperatures. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you next week. Peace and love. One love and good night.
And during the few moments that we have left,
good night.
We want to have just an off-the-cuff chat between you and me, us. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.